Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
One of the end zone punt. Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And good morning once again, everybody. It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. I'm Paul Dottino. He's Roman Oben. Glad you could join us. We'll be here for the next hour to take your phone calls and your Twitter comments about New York Giants football as they prepare to take on the St. Louis Rams out in St. Louis on Sunday. It's a 4 o'clock Eastern time start. Our phone number is 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513 or hashtag at Giants Chat. Well, Roman, before we go anywhere else, I always like to go through the injury report. Right. And of course, Roman and I do the press conference live show on MSG every Wednesday. We had an opportunity to talk a little bit about how James Brewer and Jaquan Williams both landed on the injured reserve list earlier this week because of concussions. But the questions that the Giants have going into this game, because obviously those guys aren't going to play,
right,
are Rashad Jennings and Jameel McClain. Now, I want to ask you about Jennings, because in a lot of cases, when guys are hurt at this time of the year, they might just want to shut it down. Their inclination is, okay, whatever. But that's not the case with this guy. He's a gamer. Sprained ankle, wants to play. You know, we don't know what his status is right now, if he's going to be able to get out there and practice or not. But this is a guy who really seems to want to get in the lineup.
Yeah, and if you're Rashad Jennings, you are assigned in the offseason to be the guy, the bell cow back, the guy who can execute screens, who can come out of the backfield and give you what the Giants hadn't had in prior years, minus a flash or two of David Wilson in 2012 and 13
right.
seasons. Unfortunately, he's dealt with those injuries, but I know Rashad Jennings very well, and I've spoken to him quite a bit, and he's a guy that feels like he's got a 25-carry, 120-yard game left in him, and he will not go down until the ship has totally sunk, and that's when the regular season is over. So, and honestly, Paul, I appreciate that mentality if you're Rashad Jennings,
yeah.
A guy who came here from another team. I remember him saying things like, look, this is the first time I ever felt like I'm really in the NFL. I mean, playing for Jacksonville and the Raiders for 4 years.
Okay.
That'll suck the life out of you. And nothing against those organizations. But in terms of the dysfunction and the winnings that those teams don't have when you come here, they're just expectations of greatness. You've got Super Bowl trophies and Hall of Famers along the walls. And I think Rashard Jennings being a high-character, high-quality guy, I mean, you remember, Paul, the last running back draft in the 09 draft, he was Maurice Jones-Drew's backup. Mm-hmm. He told me he didn't even start in college till his senior year. I mean, he's fought an uphill battle his entire life, and so this is really nothing compared to some of the things he's had to go through.
Sure.
And so this is why you're getting a Rashad Jennings that says, listen, ankle or not, I'm always going to try to go. I'm always going to see what it feels like pregame. I'm going to sleep in a chamber or whatever those guys do now. So it's commendable, like the approach and the toughness, if you will, that Rashad Jennings is exuding by how he's handling his injury. And I think more guys – we're not calling anyone out, but I think more guys should be like that about their injuries.
Now, he did try to get on the field a little bit in Tennessee, was able to do so, and then set himself back. And that's why he was unable to play last weekend.
Right.
And right now he's in this situation where he just does not know if he's even going to be practicing or will play. Perhaps it'll be next week against Philly, but one way or the other, I would not bet against him. I bet you Rashad Jennings gets back on the field at some point during this regular season. Jameel McClain is expected to practice today, as has been the case now for what? At least the better part of a month or two.
Yeah.
He takes off on Wednesdays with a sore knee. That's a maintenance thing.
Right.
And I also think it's interesting, Roman, you know how Coach Coughlin is, and we've talked about this 1,000 times. He really puts a lot of emphasis and a high premium on what you do in practice during the week. He doesn't like guys to take off during practice. But in situations such as this where you're trying to maintain a guy's health and well-being, you're trying to deal with, in this case, a sore knee, you have to be able to trust him mentally and emotionally that it's not going to hurt his game. And Coach Coughlin's done this with Ahmad Bradshaw in the past. He's done it now with McClain. He did it with Beeson. It tells you a lot about the player when Coach is willing to make an adjustment like this and still have him on the field on Sunday.
Yeah, Paul, and that's really the trust factor. I think number one is a player. You got to have demonstrated the ability to produce on Sundays. Again, like any company, you got to be a high producer. When you're a high producer, a high character guy, a high quality individual, then you get the benefit of the doubt to saying, hey, we can hold this guy on Wednesday and give him that extra day, if you will, and then go Thursday, Friday, rest Saturday unless you're traveling, and then Sunday go 100%. And I think even when you go back to John Beeson, I mean, he had some of those kind of luxuries, if you will, because you knew the type of player, the quality guy as he was. He's a guy that absolutely would go if he could, but it probably makes it better to get through the season holding him on Wednesdays than not doing that.
Interesting in that Jameel McClain, who I think when the season started, we all thought that, you know, he could be a good player for this team. He has done very well playing primarily out of position.
Right.
Let's remember something, Roman. He's only playing middle linebacker because Beeson's not playing.
Right.
He's supposed to be a strong side guy. Now, by his own admission, he's a better strong side guy than he is a middle guy. But he's done an adequate job in the middle. Now, I'll give you some numbers here that I want to illustrate this. He's got a career-high 101 tackles, which is solid.
Right.
Okay. In his previous, let's see, his previous high with Baltimore, he had 91. So, you know, that's good stuff. And the other thing that I like about Jameel McClain is that he's always, always, always vocal. Now, I'm on the sideline a lot of times when the Giants are on the road for the whole game,
right,
certainly in the fourth quarter for home games. You can hear him out there trying to coach guys up.
Right.
That's important.
And I think when they brought him here, there was always a lot of criticism that this team had not had the quality of linebacker since, you know, whether it's Jesse Armstead, Michael Barrow, or Boley, Antonio Pierce.
Yeah, Boley had that one good Super Bowl year, and that was about it.
Yeah, but at least, well, number one, they hadn't been a homegrown guy in a while.
No.
And the guys that would come on other teams, you hope to get a good 3 or 4 year spurt out of those guys like Antonio Pierce. I mean, I think he was really the last great signed linebacker. And I think
Pro Bowl guy.
Yeah. And when you got Jameel McClain from Baltimore, I mean, that's a model that's worked in the league. I mean, playing with Ray Lewis for, you know, 6-7 years or so, I mean, that's you're going to learn a lot about the linebacker position. And in terms of the energy and the attitude that they brought that defense, I think you were at least hoping that you would get some of that in this linebacker core. And that would spread to Jaquan Williams, obviously Kennard, who's playing extremely well. You add that with Beeson. That would also help Paysinger, Herzlick, all those guys. Unfortunately, because of injuries, that hasn't worked, Paul, but I think Jameel McClain, you have to be happy at this point to what he's done, again, saying that he's playing out of position.
He's played every game this year. Hasn't missed a game at all. And, you know, he's a tough physical player. He's had injuries in the past, and I think one of the reasons the Ravens allowed him to walk is because they were concerned about his durability. Well, surprise, surprise. Again, he hasn't missed a game with the Giants.
Yeah, and you look at the guys they had, and I know sometimes the criticism on the other side as well. When you're playing next to Ray Lewis and Terrell Suggs and then Haloti Ngata is in front of you, I mean, you're going to luck into 100 tackles just 50 assists alone. But, again, Jameel McClain, he's done an admirable job, again, playing out of position. And it would be interesting for me to see where he really fits last year with the emergence of Kennard. McClain obviously being
ready. Next year.
I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, next year. And then Jaquan Williams, who's, you know, put on IR. I mean, because of the concussions, I mean, it'd be interesting to see where the organization, what benefit of the doubt they give these guys going forward in terms of what they really see as the starting lineup next year.
Well, good news for the Giants is that Jameel McClain, I believe, is signed for next season. If I'm not mistaken, he got a 2-year deal when he came here. So they don't really have to worry about trying to tie him up. In fact, that is true. Next year, Jameel McClain is signed. So, you know, that's not an issue. The issues are Beeson coming back from the toe injury, and apparently from everything I've heard, he's doing pretty well. And then, of course, you have Jaquan Williams now going out with a concussion in the contract year. We just don't know what the future holds for him. The one thing I do want to say, though, Roman, we've discussed this before, way back when during training camp, about how because of the game and the way it's changed and there's so many of that big nickel being played with the three safety package and, you know, guys putting nickels and dimes and stuff all over the field. What do you believe the emphasis needs to be now on this linebacking unit? Do the Giants need to go out and gain additional linebackers because they want to be stout and good against the run and they want to be bigger and stronger and physical? Or is it a situation where because of the way the game has changed and morphed, is there less emphasis on having those kind of backers? I mean, we know Kennard's there. We think Beeson's going to be there. And we know McLean's going to be there. Is that enough?
I think you always have to see what the crop is dictating. Linebackers are becoming more and more athletic. You're not seeing a lot of just pure – I mean, my draft class of Ray Lewis, Zach Thomas, Kevin Hardy played for Jacksonville. I mean, you're not seeing just those pure inside line – those first and second down, get off on third down. You've got to be – you've got all these hybrid guys because of what offenses are doing in college. So for me, it's just when it goes back to the draft board, I'm not in that room when they're making that decision.
Right.
Is there a guy that they really value at that position that will go in a higher round? Because when you get to that fourth round and beyond, that third, maybe not third, but fourth round and beyond, now you're walking in the door, okay, you better be solid on special teams, and you can hope they develop this guy to be a starter in a year or two. But I would imagine there are a lot of those guys already. We've got 4 or 5 year guys like that. We've got Payson. You know, you have Herzlick here. You look at Kennard, who's going to be a stud in this league. I believe he continues to work and progress. So it really goes back to who they value. If they're top 10 players when they come out of these evaluations, if the top 10 players they value are all, you know, who are the top 50 guys? Out of these top 50 guys, who are the top 10 that we would like? If that fourth guy happens to be a linebacker that they really, really liked, and then this guy can challenge someone as a starting position, then they'll go with that. But I think when you get into those middle rounds, you got to have guys like Jaquan Williams and like Kennard that can just come in right away and contribute on special teams, and they can blitz, they can cover, they can play against a run. You've got to be able to do everything now. There's not a lot of first, second down, get off the field. I mean, that'll get you cut from a team if you can only play special teams and maybe first, second down.
What's interesting to me, Roman, I think it was during that show Finding Giants that NFL Network had about the scouts. I don't know if you caught any of those episodes.
I caught some of the episodes. I know Ryan Jones very well. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, Ryan's a good guy.
Great guy.
Really, really good guys. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the last show, which was the finale, was in the Giants draft war room, which to me was the coolest thing because in spite of the fact that I've covered this team for 32 years, I'm never getting close to that war room, Roman.
Right.
Never. It'll never happen. I've tried, but I can't get in in any event. And they gave you some video clips from the war room. And like, for example, with Kennard, he was picked in the fifth round, number 174 overall. Mm-hmm. The Giants are on the board in round number 4, and they're talking about him, thinking, you know what? This guy's a good value in the fourth round. We think we want to take him. But then after conversation, they decide, you know what? We don't think anybody else values him as well as we do. Mm-hmm. We think we can get him in the next round. We think he's going to fall because we don't think other teams think as much of him as we think he is. And that's what happened. So they wound up getting a guy, you know, who fell down an extra round on their board,
right,
who they really believed was a better prospect than most teams did,
right,
which is cool.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
Yeah.
So 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants chat if you want to participate on Twitter. Let's see if we have a couple of Twitter questions. Our lines are open, by the way. Let's see here. Think the Giants should take a big look at Sue if JPP doesn't pan out? Or what are the odds they take both and Sue wanting to play in New York? Well, let me ask you something. Ndamukong Suh is going to command a king's ransom.
Right.
Right? With salary caps the way they are, I don't know that you can afford to pay a king's ransom to a defensive tackle no matter how good he is. That's just my philosophy.
Right.
Roman, counter me on this. You played offensive tackle. You understand the priorities along that defensive front. Defensive tackles are important, but to me, the pass rusher is the guy who commands the premium.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, this is an era where you're drafting guards high in the first round. Nose guards, safeties are the new linebackers. I mean, so, and I've said this on prior shows, I don't think the Giants' philosophy would pay a guy like Ndamukong Suh a contract, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of what you gave J.J. Watt, what Houston Texans gave J.J. Watt, that $100 million contract or an $80 million contract. And the fact that he said he wants to come to New York, every NFL player wants to come to New York. So that's another discussion. But, again, I don't think it would happen. I don't think they would sign Ndamukong Suh. I think they – now, if Ndamukong Suh could play for $3 million a year, I'm sure they'd love to sign him. But I don't think – I think they'd get him on the tail end, maybe like a Sean Rogers, and see if he still has a couple of years too left and – Catch Ndamukong Suh in about 3 or 4 years.
All right, we've got some more Twitter questions. Again, 201-939-4513. AJ Marshall wants to know the update on Rashad Jennings. Again, we don't know what his status is right now. Did not practice yesterday. I don't think they were too optimistic about having him practice this week, and that would really significantly hurt his chances playing against the Rams. And by the way, guy with a sprained ankle, Roman, artificial turf, not a great thing for it.
Well, it's field turf now, so it's not the
old concrete stuff.
Not the old stuff that we played on. But yeah, when you have a lower extremity injury, you've got to rest and elevate it, and you've got to do some active work. But getting off your feet, only to get back on it to put more trauma on it, sometimes it's kind of productive. So you've got to be really delicate with those injuries. You have to be delicate. And again, the Giants do a great job in terms of trusting the medical staff and not. Hey, coach, I think I can go. Then you go out there, then you set yourself back. So I think that the best decision is going to be made overall.
We have another one here from Joe CS02008. Says, can you guys compare the early careers of Corey Washington and Cruz? Was Cruz a major contributor on specials before starting? Well, he did play specials, but Roman, to be quite frank with you, he didn't last on specials too long.
No, he didn't. I mean, 1,500 yards is us. Well, it really wasn't his rookie year. It was his second year.
Right. His rookie year, he wound up on IR after he made the team.
Yeah, but I think it's
hamstring injury, by the way.
It's two different years because, obviously, that was a Super Bowl year. I mean, you go back to that Jets game, the catch that really changed the season, turned it around.
Three touchdowns that day, preseason game.
I mean, Corey Washington's success, obviously, was a surprise in training camp, and he caught, what, 5 touchdowns in 5 preseason games? I think the 5 preseason games helped Corey Washington more than anybody on this team because that gave just an extra game of evaluations. And, you know, he earned his way to be a part of the team. And you remember, what did Coach Coughlin said yesterday? What did he say yesterday about 4th, 5th receivers?
You got to be really good on specials, for sure. That's like a primary objective for him.
Yeah, and the fans that have asked all season long and it's not about – you don't go into the week and say, well, let's get this 4th or 5th guy more catches because we just want to see what he's got.
No.
I mean, you're getting opportunities, and people don't realize practices are filmed. Walkthroughs are filmed. Sometimes I've been on teams where I heard they film workouts. I mean, you're constantly being evaluated. The camera's constantly on
sure.
you. The mental stuff, the cerebral stuff Coach Coughlin said about Corey Washington is actually good.
Yes.
He's got a good commanding awareness of the concepts of the offense. So it's uphill. I mean, it'll be good. It's going this way. That's why I'm not uphill battle.
Yeah.
The
arrow's pointing upward, yeah. But he certainly needs to be better on special teams, and he's going to have to be better in practice. He needs those two things because you said he's got the mental stuff down. Coach Coughlin right. already admitted that. But the other two things are to the point now where he can force his way into the lineup on Sunday.
Yeah.
And really, that's what it comes down to.
And I think when you look at this team and when you really peel back the layers, which would be peeling the layers of an onion, which means a lot of tears, especially that middle stretch of the season with losing 7 straight, I think, Paul, you have to still say that this team could still be 8-6 right now. The Jacksonville game, that Dallas game in the fourth quarter,
yeah.
and that 49ers game. I mean, and whether it was injuries or just not being able to play a complete game, this team has – you don't need to make wholesale changes in certain key areas, which gives you a lot of hope that things can turn around pretty quickly next season.
We have a NYG reporter, also known as Robert, says there are still 2 games left, but do you guys have personally locked in any players or positions in the 2015 draft? He follows up and says, I imagine if we split the last 2 games, Big Blue would still have a top 10 selection on draft night, and then he questions too soon to think about it. Well, I'll be honest. For me, it is. I don't start thinking about draft picks until I look at the college bowl games, mm-hmm. which is the first time I really start to focus in on it. And then the college all-star games, that's when I really, really start to focus in on it.
Yeah, then the combines.
Yeah, I mean.
Preparation. Then the draft books. The draft books don't come out until March anyway.
I mean, to be honest with you, and I understand that the scouts' primary job is during our season because they're scouting the college players while they're playing. For me, I'm spending so much time on what the Giants are doing now that I can't be scouting college guys really at this point.
Yeah, and Paul, I think right now you should – we did this yesterday with Anita. You should probably go to what the playoff standings are right now and who's eliminated and who's out of it, because then you can just count right now from the bottom. I think there's three-win teams, so that'd be like 1, 2, 3.
Okay.
And then there's a few 4-win teams, and you got some 5-win teams. So you can already see right now the Giants would probably fall, you know, a victory last week. I think they're still at 7 right now overall.
Yes, that's correct.
And then so, you know, another victory or two could jump them from, you know, from 7 to 10. And it's not a bad pick to get that number 10 spot, the 11 spot, or – because a lot of those high draft guys, the Jameis Winston, all those guys that you don't want those guys anyway, because you don't need what they have to offer.
All right. Well, let's just offer this. We know the Giants will not be a top four,
right?
Because those teams have significantly worse records and they can't catch the Giants in terms of the race for a higher pick.
Yeah, go to the top. I mean, let's say right now.
So right now it's going to be the Bucs, the Titans, the Jaguars, and the Raiders. Now the Raiders are 2-12. Best they can do is 4-12. So that's it. Right. Giants are not getting top four. Fifth is the Redskins. Even if they win their last two games, they've won 5 games. They'd lose the tiebreaker to the Giants. So guess what?
We're not getting the higher pick.
That's it. Giants are not top five. You know they're not top five. Jets are 3-11. I'm not sure who wins the tiebreaker if they both finish with 5 wins. I don't know the answer to that. So potentially, again, without having correct or should I say concrete information, I'm going to say the highest the Giants can go is pick 6. Mm. The highest they can go. And then after that, Falcons have 5 wins. Giants have 5 wins. Bears have five.
Yeah, you're going 7, 8, 9. So Falcons,
Panthers
Giants,
have 5.
Bears, yeah.
Vikings have 6. Rams have 6. And then you finally get to pick 13 when you're talking about teams that have 7 wins. Now, that's as high as the Giants can go.
Right.
Is 7.
Right.
So the last team with 7 wins is the Miami Dolphins, and they are 7-7. So let's put it to you this way. This much I can tell you. The Giants cannot pick any lower than 16, and they cannot pick any higher than 6.
Yeah, 6.
That we know. 6 and 16 is a pretty wide margin, Roman.
Yeah, and again, once you get out of that top 5, whether it's Mariota and Jameis Winston or whomever, if he comes out early, you know, some of those guys that are really, I mean, the Giants aren't going to be in that category anyway. So, and I think sometimes it just gives you the ability and the luxury to get the guy you really want versus the guy who fans think you should draft. Based on the popularity of the college or who they were, what they did at the combines. And I think sometimes, you know, no disrespect, but sometimes fans just don't have that intricate knowledge. Like you talked about never having been in the draft room. Sometimes fans don't really have the knowledge of some of these. But look, Odell Beckham, everyone wanted Zach Martin, and they got Odell Beckham. And I called Odell Beckham on our show. I'm the only guy in the building that predicted that Odell Beckham would go to the Giants at 12. And I think he's fared well so far.
He's done very well. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for a free entry now at DraftKings.com.
That's DraftKings.com.
All right, let's go to the phone calls. 201-939-4513. Jason from Maine, you're up on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hello.
How you guys doing today?
Good. Excellent, to talk Jason. To you.
Good. Just got 2 questions for you. The one is on just on the salary cap. It seems like we're always strapped there each year. And I'm wondering, for the next maybe 2 years, do you think that there will be more room for the Giants to sign free agents, things like that? Do you think, what's their situation going to be, do you think, in the next couple of years?
Well, I will tell you this. I understand it to be, and again, I'm going to talk in generalities here, because, A, we don't know exactly how much the NFL salary cap's going to move. We right. think it's going okay. to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
We think so.
It could be anywhere from 5 to 10% of the prior year.
Right.
I mean, realistically.
So we don't know about that first, but I will tell you this. Based on the number of guys the Giants have under contract, I believe the number that I came up with the other day, because I actually started to do this exercise, was 17 guys are up as unrestricted free agents in 2 weeks after the season is over. Actually, it's wow. after the it's the calendar year. Was it March 1st,
yeah.
Roman?
Yeah, the first day of the league year or whatever.
Right. That's what it is. But there are 17, I believe, unrestricted free agents. And some of them are making some pretty good money, like an Antrell Roll.
Right.
You know, JPP is voiding the last year of his contract, so he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He's a big-ticket money guy. So to be perfectly honest with you, I can only say this. There's going to be a lot of room for movement because there are so many players that are coming due. Now, how the Giants want to allocate those funds and who they want to bring in and who they want to resign, then that's another question entirely. But you're asking me, will they have the ability to make movement with the roster? The answer is yes, if for no other reason, because there are so many guys up.
Right.
And that, does that answer your question?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. I was just wondering how it is, because usually they just seem so tight, you know, where they can't really seem to make too many moves, you know, in the off season. And I was just wondering if they were going to be a little more flexible for the next year or maybe the next couple of years.
Well, I think the goal here upstairs, when we say upstairs versus, you know, it's like labor and management, like locker rooms downstairs and the administration's upstairs. But in terms of the decisions that are made upstairs, it's really about making the right decisions of what fits for this team, what fits for the roster structure. You will not see a big splash signing on the first year free agency of the Giants unless it's a guy that's already here. And there are enough guys here that you have to make a decision on what to do with, a la, you know, Prince Mukamura. And
well, they made one big splash last year when they signed DRC. He was the one real big splash, and then Schwartz was kind of a secondary guy.
It's still at that $3-5 million number, which isn't, you know, $8-10 million. You're not seeing some big, you know, these baseball type contracts. I mean, you're not going to see the Giants ever make. I mean, I'm comparing it to what the Redskins did for many, many years.
Oh, yeah.
Albert Haynesworth. I mean,
they're not doing that.
Yeah, you're not going to see the Giants do that. But again, it's really about bringing the right guys in here that can really come in and compete. Guys that want to be here. And as again, as a player who, you know, look, I've been through free agency as a fourth-year player. I ended up going to Cleveland. Then I got cut 2 years later as a salary cap casualty. Went to Tampa, won a Super Bowl, then became a free agent again. Then I got traded. Then I had to restructure my contract. When I got there to extend it, I mean, it's, you know, you go through the gamut of those type of things. And I think as a player, from our standpoint, it's a part of the business. I mean, you can't take it personally, and you can't say this team doesn't like me or I wanted to be here or it's better for my family. Look, I was fortunate enough, you know, being an East Coast guy, growing up in Washington, D.C., I was 4 hours from home here. I was 5.5 hours when I played in Cleveland. And then as I got older, my last 6 years were spent in warm climates, Tampa and San Diego. So I would have loved to – I always talked about being jealous of Amani Toomer and Howard Cross, who spent – all their years here and never had to move and sell their house and all that stuff. But again,
that's rare.
You have to be fortunate enough that you had the ability to play as long as you did, and then you come back and you choose to be a part of the community that
Jason,
you'd be a part of.
Before I let you go, I only want to say one thing, and I mentioned DRC before, and I just say that because that's an example of how, no matter how much we think we know, the Giants pulled DRC out of left field.
Yeah, they did.
Nobody in their right mind thought that they were going to spend big money on a big-time superstar defensive back. And all of a sudden, DRC's coming in for a visit, and within 24 hours, he's signed.
Yep.
I mean, so you just don't know anyway. But I appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Jason.
Hey.
Let's go to Joe from Pennsylvania. You're next on the show. Hello, Joe. How are you today? Thanks for calling
Good.
Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Great to talk to you guys, Roman, Paul. There.
Hey, Joe.
You too.
I want to bring up there, Paul, I did say, I remember way back when you were very high on Morton, and I said, well, give what's-his-name a chance there, Beckham. Maybe he'll turn into Jerry Rice. I don't know if you recall that. But I'm just saying, would the Giants still be better off, you think, with Morton, Paul?
Zach Martin?
Yeah.
No.
Here's my deal. I'm old school, and I build with the offensive line first. I still would have taken Zach Martin, but I want to make something clear as well. I never questioned Odell Beckham's skill set when he came out for the draft. I thought he was the third receiver who would wind up falling in the on the board.
Right.
He was. and he's turned out to be absolutely incredible, explosive, fun to watch, productive beyond belief. I don't think there's anything that this guy can't do. So please don't misinterpret when I tell you that I would have taken Zach Martin as a knock on Odell Beckham Jr., because it's not a knock on Odell Beckham Jr. It's just going back to an old school belief that I believe if you don't have brick walls along your offensive line, you're not going to win a championship. And that's all that's about.
Yeah.
Well, would you still take Martin today if you had to pick?
I would have taken Zach Martin, and I'm going to stand by that. And in maybe 10 years, I won't say that any longer. But it's old school philosophy, you know, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah, well, they both look good. He's going to be
an
all-pro two-way, you know.
Look, my friend, I'm thrilled that Odell Beckham Jr. is here. Don't get me wrong. And he's fun to watch, man. I know Roman's big time on him, and that's great. It's just a matter of where do you build? And I build in the trenches. And I can't second-guess myself. I would be wrong to sit here and tell you now that I would have drafted Beckham. Then I'd be a hypocrite. Because I told people for months I would take offensive lineman Zach Martin.
Yeah, and again, it just goes back, Joe, it just goes back to the philosophies. And trust me, being an offensive lineman, and I was on a Giants draft show, and I said, it makes too much – and I was joking. I was being facetious. I was like, it makes too much sense to draft Zach Martin if he's there. So they're going to take Odell Beckham. And I said that, and John Schmelk, everyone laughed. And I'm like, no. And I was like, no, seriously, it makes too much sense to draft Zach Martin, so you're going to take Odell Beckham in terms of fans and the bigger picture. But – look, you can get a guy off the street and start 16 games and address it the next year, address it in the second, third round. You knew Odell Beckham was going to go anywhere from 9 to 15. I wouldn't want to see Eli Manning with better protection scrambling to get the ball to Preston Parker, Ogletree, and maybe a little more Corey Washington with an injured Victor Cruz. I'm glad that they drafted Odell Beckham because you can always fix the offensive line. And I think you – going back to this time last year in terms of, you know, spring of 14, you said, okay, maybe Brandon Mosley is going to be a guy. We can get this guy, John Jerry, from Miami. He started 2 weeks. Pugh's going to be better this year. Beatty's coming back. I mean, you brought in all these 27-year-old guys. I mean, literally, all the guys that they brought in, J.D. Walton, John Jerry, I mean, those guys were all 27 years old. So, and you sign Jeff Schwartz. So I think they were trying to do things to address the offensive line so that you can have a better chance to get Odell Beckham or get a better receiver. But the year before, we keep forgetting, you drafted Pugh in the first round.
Right.
I mean, he was the first rookie to start an entire season since Lawrence Taylor. So now, do you go the Dallas model and go O-line 2 years old? No, but, hey, you got to be happy with at least the approach that they were trying to get to, especially because Odell Beckham had such a great year and he – most likely is going to be the rookie of the year and offensively only playing 10 games thus far.
Yeah, he's certainly got a real good chance to win it. You know, Roman, truthfully, it's like going to the supermarket. And thanks for the call, Joe.
Yeah.
Do you want apples or oranges? You're going to go pick up a piece of fruit.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of philosophically speaking, which one do you want? It's not that the apple's no good or the orange is no good. You know, and that's fine. I'll tell you this, though. Dallas has three number one picks along that offensive line, and that's the reason they're winning right now.
Well, and then their running back broke their hand, so we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks.
All right, Len from Maryland. I don't think I've heard from you in a long time, Len. Happy holiday to you.
Hey, happy holiday to you, Paul. How you doing? Roman, how are you?
Excellent, Len. Yourself?
Good, good, good. Hey, Roman, here's the good news.
Yes, sir.
The Giants are on this weekend in Baltimore, so I'm gonna get to see them. I don't have to go sports bar. I can stay in my living room and watch.
Oh yeah, because the 4 o'clock game.
Yeah,
it's the 4 o'clock game.
It is.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
good stuff.
So that'll be pretty cool. Listen, you know, if we split the difference between 6 and 15, and we draft somewhere in the top 10, you know, that's the good news. We're gonna get a plug-in player. I mean, top 10. We're gonna get another player, and you know, long run, that's the way I want to go. I want to go draft and undrafted free agents after the draft. You know, if our scouts are as good as Mr. Mara says they are, then I want to find those gems, those undrafted free agents. And if we got a little extra money this year, you know, you tell the scouts, give me a list of the top 10 undrafted free agents when the draft is over. And go get those guys. Go get those guys. You know, I'm getting tired of losing with other people's cast-offs. I want to lose with my guys. If we're going to lose, I want it to be my guys, who my scouts think are the best players. Now, I want to be the first to say this because I know it's going to come up, and I kind of alluded to it here, but there's going to be a name that's going to come up right away. Right away in the offseason, this is the guy we should sign. Roman, you'll know this guy. Well, Paul, you will too.
Go ahead.
Jeremy Parnell from Dallas. To solve our offensive line problems, Jeremy Parnell.
You know, it's interesting you mention him because I'm of the understanding that Dallas cannot re-sign him. They don't have the money for
okay.
it.
Mm-hmm. Right,
he'll be out there.
Right.
All right, here's the point I'm trying to make. We're not going to beat Dallas. And remember, they beat us twice this year. They beat us twice last year.
Yeah.
We're not going to beat Dallas with ex-Dallas players. And you can plug in any other team that you want in there to my philosophy here. All right? Jeremy Parnell can't start on Dallas. And the guy in front of him isn't even Dallas's best offensive lineman. If he can't start at Dallas, why do we think he might save us? Now, I'm just using Jeremy as an example here, okay?
And actually, by the way, Len, I think Free's also a free agent, too.
Yeah, Doug Free at right tackle. Yeah, he's also.
By the way, just so you know, I think both of those guys are up.
Listen, for me, neither one. You're not going to beat these teams by taking their cast offs. Look, you know, I'm glad Jeff Schwartz is on the team, but, you know, if you look back at Kansas City in the offseason, they let three starting offensive linemen go, including Jeff Schwartz. And they got a better record than we do.
Len, I have an interesting thought on this, and it goes kind of to what you're talking about in terms of free agents and signing cast-offs and stuff. And we'll keep you here for just a second because I do want to let you finish.
Sure. Thank you.
But
here's the
thought, and it's why I put such a premium on drafting a stud offensive lineman in the first round. Because and Roman has been through all of this. He's been through the machine of the NFL, so he understands the differences between how you acquire players. When you draft a stud offensive lineman in the first round, there's a very good chance, if he's really as good as you think he is, he's going to be on your team for a decade.
Yeah.
There's a real good chance
of that. That's why you draft a guy that high.
That's why you do that. Because even if you sign a quality offensive lineman, chances are in 3 or 4 years he's a salary cap casualty. And he's not going to be around very long. He's a quick fix, so to speak. So that's why, in my frame of thinking, old school again, I want to get that stud offensive lineman, plug him in, and not touch it. For 10 years, baby, I'm set. And that's why I prefer to draft the stud offensive lineman, the blue-chip guaranteed guy who's going to be around for a decade in the first round, and I'd be more apt to purchase or go free agency at other positions because I just want to know that my offensive lineman is set in stone. He's in concrete, and he's not going anywhere. That's why.
Now, you know, let me just say one more thing, and thanks for keeping me on. I really do appreciate it. And I want to address this to Roman, see what he thinks about this. Roman, I think we need to get stronger, physically stronger on both sides of the ball, along the line. And that's where I would start to rebuild this team. I'm not going to use the word soft. I hate that word applying to a football player for what they go through. I can't. It's almost embarrassing to use that word. But, you know, we've got to get strong, particularly, you know, guard and center.
Yeah.
Roman, we need some power lifters. I mean, I remember Chris Snee, the national power lifting champion. I mean, we need power lifters in there.
You know, Len,
we need guys who can at least hold the line of scrimmage and not let the defense change the line of scrimmage.
You know, it's funny, Len, that you say this because I'm always from the philosophy of when I speak to the scouts all the time, and I say if you're looking at an interior lineman, was he an all-state wrestler in high school? Was he a shot putter? Is he explosive? I mean, I threw shot and discus in high school and college. You know, it's a certain type of guy that just knows how to just naturally use his leverage. And those are the guys that when you see that running game really moving and you just see lines surging and hips rolling, and on the other side of the ball, you see defensive guys, especially some of these shorter guys like that 6'2", 6'3 range, guys that can just get underneath guys and make a living in the backfield. I mean, it goes hand in hand. So in terms of, you know, weight room strong is one thing because that's dead weight. But guys that are functionally strong guys, and I would take a guy, if I was a scout and I'm looking at linemen, Was he a 4A state champion, 5A, whatever state he's from, Iowa, one of those kind of places? Was he a state champion wrestler in high school? Was he a shot putter and discus thrower? And same thing for the defensive lineman. Was he because that when you're learning how to be explosive at 16, 17, 18, and then you get bigger, you get in college, you start, then you get weight room strong, that explosion is inherently ingrained into your way of playing, your body. I mean, you've been doing that since you were a kid. So you're absolutely right. I mean, and it's not about weight room strong, but in terms of functional strong. And I know the way these kids are training now, and I would say kids, these are grown men. The flipping the tires and doing the rope thing all the time, I mean, that's not always the way I would do it. I mean, I like old school guys, bench squat, cling, power lifting, just doing your simple movements, hips. You know, I mean, I believe that 100%.
Big strong guys beat little guys all the time, Roman.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
We got to get bigger on both sides of the ball, and you know, let's go beat the Rams and let's win another game.
Len, you know what? They're getting bigger because Hankins is going to be a really good player, as we talked about. He's already starting in his second year to make a real impact on this team. And I think we all know that Weston Richburg is going to wind up being the center of the future. Whether or not it's opening day next year, which I think it probably will be, he's going to be fine there. Right. So you're getting some of what you want already.
Well, I want more of that. I want power games. I want to control that line of scrimmage. God, I watch Dallas and something. You know, watch Philadelphia. And, I mean, they're changing the line of scrimmage, Roman.
Yeah, and it's funny.
The ball gets snapped, and the line of scrimmage is 2 yards in the other direction. You know, it's just amazing how they do that.
Len, stay on real quick. I want to address something you said earlier in terms of the division. And I know that there was always a philosophy that, you know, that exists in the NFL from a coaching, scouting standpoint. You've got to build a team that can win the division. And because you look at the model of what's working. I mean, let's just say the Rams that they're playing this week, NFC West. Who's in the division? Yeah. Seattle, San Francisco, Arizona, who went 10-6 last year and didn't go to the playoffs, and the Rams. Jeff Fisher, who's used to playing in a tough division, that AFC North, AFC Central, you've got to build a team that can win, beat the division. You want to beat them physically. You want to beat them with speed. And again, Marty Scheidenheimer, when I was in San Diego, he had this big thing in the weight room, championship start in the division. So if you can't comprise a team that can compete with Dallas' offensive line, that can compete with the Philadelphia Eagles' speed, that can compete with whatever Washington is doing, whatever the Redskins are. I mean, that's where it starts. And I'm pretty sure the Giants have that in mind. But
we're not going to see Taylor Lewan for 4 more years. We won't see him on the field for 4 more years. But we're going to face Trent Williams 8 times in the next 8 times in the next 4 years.
Right.
I mean, you got to build a team that can beat Trent Williams.
Trent Williams,
and Peters,
Jason
and Peters,
and Tyron Smith. Yeah, exactly. The best tackles in the league are all in the NFC East.
All right, Len, appreciate it. You have a great holiday.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Let's go, Giants.
All right, take care. 201-939-4513. I want to go back to that.
He makes a lot of sense.
He usually does.
Yeah, he's good. Good call.
The point about beating the division, it's a very practical point. It's not just about the mentality of you want to beat your rivals, but it's very practical, Roman, because A, you play the most games in the division on your schedule.
That's 6 games off the top.
Right off the top.
Yeah.
So you darn well better do good in those 6 games.
Yeah.
And the other reason is, no matter what your record is, if you win your division, you're going to the playoffs.
Yep. Until the NFL changes the structure, which they won't, unless you've got a 7-9 team like you're probably going to have this year with Atlanta, one of those teams.
Remember Seattle some years ago was 7-9.
Yeah.
And they beat the Redskins in the first round.
Yeah, yeah. And then you've had a Giants team. You've had Arizona last year. You had New England a few years back, 11-5, and didn't go to the playoffs.
Right.
So I mean, something's got to.
There is a reason
until
why
they change it. It's going to be the way it is.
Coaches put a heavy, heavy premium on division games, and it's because of the way the system is.
Yep.
And I don't blame them one bit for that. All right, 201-939-4513. Let's go back to Giants chat. Holy smokes! Looks like we get a whole screen full of new chat questions and comments here. So let's see if we can get to some of these folks. I'm a little down too far. Okay. Grimwood says, do you think the Giants are quicker to put players on IR now that the playoffs are out of reach? I don't think so at all, because the Giants medical staff operates strictly on medical evidence. They don't deal with other stuff like some other teams do.
Independent of the record, and I always use the quote, it's about the life of the player, not the football part, because the football part will take care of itself. But
yeah,
you don't want to have a guy play for two more weeks at the expense of lingering off-season surgeries, which is going to delay you going into the next season. So if a guy can play, he's going to play, whether it's week one or week 17.
We have Robert again, wants to know how many draft picks the G-men have this year. Do they get any extra picks? Well, they might get some compensatory picks. Remember, the NFL has a very complex formula, and it has to do with guys you lost via free agency and guys you signed, and then how well they produced the previous season. So there's always an opportunity to pick up a couple of extra picks, one, two, even three. I don't know. I suspect the Giants may get a compensatory pick or two,
but
I just don't know. And the league figures that out, you know, sometime before the draft, and it's very complex. They don't let anybody know what the formula is, which
Trust me,
ridiculous.
I've got some good relationships over there. I'm always trying to figure it out, and I can't figure it out.
Forget about it. It's not going to happen. All right, let's see. We also have Will Ruiz says Washington over Parker and Randall. Clearly a Corey Washington fan, and I understand that. You know, the guy did a lot of good things during the course of the preseason. Stu DiMiglio says, if we lose the next two, what pick then if we're 5-11? Well, we already told you, can't pick higher than 6.
Yep.
That's pretty much locked in right now, as far as I could tell. Again, haven't talked to the NFL, but as far as I could tell, that's what I'm looking at. We have James Desi says, based on his production and limited time this season, do you think Robert Ayers will be a starter for the Giants next year? He is signed. I think he had a really good season.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he be?
I just don't know. Sometimes with guys, especially with defensive linemen, and you have to be careful not to fall into this trap. And I'm not saying good or bad against Robert Ayers, but you look at the Seahawks, you look at some of these teams, Titans, Rams are like this. They pride themselves, and even the Giants in their heyday, they pride themselves in saying, we've got 6-7 guys that can start for anybody. We can just roll guys in and roll, and then Ayers has been a guy that can always come in on third down and rush. He could be serviceable. He's versatile. But sometimes it's at the expense of you not really doing one thing and saying, this is our right defensive end, or this is going to be our 3 technique opening. But when you become the guy that can come off the bench and can produce at a high level, then that's your label. And sometimes label and perception is not always reality. And that works good or bad. So I think hopefully for Ayers, he could come in and start. But when he started, he's done well. Before this surge of sacks the last 3 weeks, he was the guy getting it done. And it's amazing, I mean, what the sack total would be if Ayers hadn't got injured. I mean, he would have definitely had some multiple sack performances, 6-7 sacks in a 2 or 3 game span easily, the way he was playing.
Just as a matter of conversation, he is signed through next season.
Right.
Just so you, contractually, he is obligated at this point. And I would think the Giants would be very, very happy to see him back here in the summer. Let's see here. Shane says, if you had to pick either JPP or Roll to re-sign for big money, who would you choose? Well, I'm gonna cut you right off there. How much?
Yeah.
You know? How much is too much, Roman? I don't know. And honestly, isn't that the biggest problem that a GM faces nowadays, Roman?
Yeah.
Because when you try to determine the value of any given player, and then you say, okay, look, that's the resources we're going to allocate to that player, well, you're stuck with the salary cap now if for some reason he gets hurt.
Yep.
Look, or for, let's say, with the Bears,
yep.
Jay Cutler
is
now mincemeat
yep.
in Chicago, and they've committed so much salary cap money to him, they're in deep trouble now. You know how many good guys they're probably going to have to let go during the offseason because of the cap hit they've taken?
Yeah.
So you have to, those ramifications have to be incorporated into the equation. Now, one thing I will say, Roll has been not only a really good player here and a good locker room guy, he's also been very reliable and durable. I mean, he's played through all kinds of injuries. That works in his favor. JPP, of course, the last couple of years prior to this, has had to work through some injuries which significantly hurt his production. These are all questions that come into play.
Yeah, and then you just have to look at the flat numbers in terms of age. JPP is, what, 25?
Going to be 26, I think,
26.
A week or two.
Entrar Roll is 30, 31 years
31,
old.
I think.
10th year versus 4th year. So
it's
sometimes
all part of
that
it.
Becomes a part of it. But obviously, what Antral Roll would demand, or his agent, whatever, is not quite what JPP would demand, being a fourth-year guy, you know, heading into his first big free agent contract. So sometimes just circumstantially that answer kind of solves itself in terms of what who's valued where and why.
I don't know what a reasonable number is for either guy, but I wouldn't mind seeing them both back.
Yeah,
to
yeah, be 100%.
Honest with you. All right. Joe says, do you think Beckham wins Rookie of the Year? It's a shame that Zach Martin isn't even considered. Well, you know, the skill position players who put up big numbers are always going to get the headlines, and they'll be the favorites to win it. Right now, it's got to be between Beckham and Benjamin and Evans.
Mike Evans, yeah.
Those are the three guys who are putting up huge numbers.
And rookie, I mean, Zach Martin could make the Pro Bowl this year as a rookie.
He could.
Yeah, he could make the Pro Bowl as a rookie.
I'd have no problem with that.
Yeah, I think I've heard he's going to get a lot of votes. So, and for a first-round pick to come in and what Dallas has done, DeMarco Murray being considered a potential for a player of the year, you're going to have three or four offensive linemen from that Dallas Cowboys line go play in the Pro Bowl.
We have L. Antifake says, it takes a man to recognize Odell could be the best receiver of all times. Oben is talking wisdom.
Say that part again?
The fellow says it takes a man to recognize that Odell could be the best receiver of all times. Oben is talking wisdom. He clearly was very happy with your projection that he would land with the Giants.
Yeah, I mean it's when you don't hear this term said a lot, and when you talk about being NFL ready, being mature, his dad played for LSU, mother's a track coach, and when your mom is a head track, I mean the discipline that it takes, you know, women that run track and coach track, your parents are teachers and coaches or they played. You walk in the door with a different level of maturity, and you can even hear in the way he responds. And his, I mean, when he had the big catch, I think it was a Monday night game. I mean, he turned on David Letterman. I mean, what rookie doesn't want to be on David?
Right.
Not Letterman, but whoever the new,
whoever it was,
whoever the talk late night show is.
Fallon, maybe.
Yeah, whoever it was, but you know, he wants to win. He wants to help his team win, and that's what's more important.
All right, listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get a free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code blue to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter blue for a free entry now at DraftKings.com.
That's DraftKings.com.
More comments on the Twitter here for the last 8 minutes of the show. Easy says, we need to draft starters and get quality depth and free agency to help mentor these rookies. Need maulers on the D-line and O-line. Roman, he's singing our song. I don't have a problem with that one whatsoever. Vic Fontana says, Len continues to make a great point and has stood by his thought. Our line is weak and appearing and small when I view other teams. Okay. Magadan Carroll says, I think we overlook him a lot, but it was a heck of a play, JPP running down RG3. If there's one guy we bring back, it should be JPP. All right. I think a lot of people would like to see him back.
Yeah, I think we have a caller as well. Before we're going to take a caller, then we're going to talk about the Rams real quick.
Okay, go ahead. Who's next up on the line? Let's see. It would be Frank. Hello, Frank. You're next on the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi.
Great to talk with you. Thanks. Happy holidays.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so glad I've got the both of you because I've been a big fan of yours over the years, and
thank you, Frank.
Love your insight, especially on the line. And so glad you're back with the organization for good. Wonderful. You're a Giant for life, as far as I'm concerned. And Paul, you know, I know you're an offensive line, defensive line type of guy, and have a lot of knowledge. So with that all in mind, I'd like to throw this out to you and ask your opinion. I'm just so concerned about the line, and I don't understand how we're going about things or where the deficiency lies, you know, whether it's in scouting, whether it's in the evaluation / GM or coaching, which no one speaks about. And, you know, because here's where I look at it, and let's look the way this line was composed. This isn't like a new regime came in and we had a bunch of hangers-on or some 33-year-old guys on their last leg. I mean, this there was a concerted effort made to put this particular line together, and let's look what we got. So someone thought enough of Beatty to pay him five or top five or seven money in the league at his position. And you've got Richburg, who was a second-round pick, high second round, at which you would expect a guy to be a starter at least in his second year and be a slash dominant player. We got Walton, brought him in with the idea that he's good enough to be a very good starting center in this league. And we got Schwartz, who was basically our number one draft, free agent pickup. And then we have a first-round pick playing at right tackle. And then they also thought enough of Jerry and Brown to bring them in as backup. That's what's been done just in the last 2 years. And look what we've got. We have to run a trick play with Beckham to try to get a fourth and one. We run the ball for a yard and a half on first down, two out of every three series. I mean, where does the fault lie in that this is what we have after all that time, effort, and money put into assembling a line? We basically did what the Cowboys did. Look what they've got, and look what we've got. And sorry for the rant, guys, but I love my Giants, and I'm upset.
It's okay. And Dallas did use three number one picks on offensive linemen, Frank. The Giants did not, so it's not the same.
We got a first and a tie second, and Beckham's a second as well. Beatty's a second as well.
Yeah, but still, ones are ones. There's a difference. And there's a reason why those guys were picked where they were, and there's a reason why they've been very, very, very good for the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think Richburg is a second-rounder. I mean, let's have this discussion in 3 years.
Yeah.
You've got Richburg being probably one of the better centers in the league, and you've got Odell Beckham probably would have been a Pro Bowler at that point. I mean, and people are going to still have discussions about what.
Thanks for the call, Frank,
who Dallas drafted. I mean, which is fine. I mean, but again, as an organization, you've got to live behind the decisions that you make. There was enough competition brought into the O-line meeting room to say that this line was going to be significantly better, because I think
that was the plan.
That was the plan, yeah. And now if it was, let's bring in one or two guys and draft three or four guys and let them all compete, I don't think James Brewer is going to be a part of the future. I mean, Brandon Mosley, I mean, we hadn't heard his name since training camp. He was almost penciled in to start at right guard when Snead retired. Again, when you decide to start Richburg at left guard, it was the case of he's one of the better five guys, and we got to put him somewhere. So
right.
Having him play that guard position is going to make him a better center next year.
Yeah.
And then with J.D. Walton at center, he's proved that he can come back and have a healthy season. That's good for his career. And then he's signed back next year, so maybe he becomes a backup and J.D. goes back to center. Do you move Pewter left guard? If I think he's a left guard, if anything, on the inside. Or you keep him at right tackle, and then you put Schwartz back at right guard. I think he's a better right guard than anything.
Right.
And then you figure out what to do at the left guard position for next year. So I don't think, I always use the term wholesale changes. I don't think the wholesale changes. But we can talk about what Dallas is doing. But honestly, if the Cowboys don't win the Super Bowl, no one's going to be talking about, look at all the moves Dallas made and how they were the best team in the league from week one to week 12.
It's all about the results.
The running back broke their hand. They've collapsed at the end of every season for the last half a decade. And now you're looking at, in terms of the better teams in the league, in the NFC, it's Arizona, it's Green Bay. I don't think anybody in the NFC South could compete. Dallas is in there. The Eagles are in that conversation.
What? Arizona and Green Bay have tough offensive lines.
Yeah.
Those guys are nasty.
Yeah.
I do want to mention Martin H. Nohanson does say, am I wrong or did we get a seventh rounder from the Broncos for McManus, the kicker? He's absolutely right. The Giants did add a seventh round pick for trading McManus. So, in part, answer to the question before about Giants having draft picks. Yes, we do know they did pick up an extra seven for the kicker. All right, quickly, we only have 1 minute left. Before we go, Roman, just a quick thought on what's going to happen Sunday against the Rams.
Sunday, this is my just quick Rams preview. I mean, you're playing a Jeff Fisher team, and I played against a lot of his teams in the past when you had, Albert Haynesworth and Javon Curse on the D-line, and that offensive line was big and tough, and you had Eddie George, McNair. I mean, they hit people. They didn't block or tackle. They hit people. And with Greg Williams, the defense, I don't want to bring up his history, but, I mean, they're going to be a physical a bunch. And let's not forget the Rams have beaten three teams that appeared in the last two Super Bowls: Denver, Seattle, and the 49ers. This year, this 6-8 team beat all those three teams And the Giants have only won two road games, at Tennessee and obviously at Washington earlier in the season. So this is going to be a dogfight for the Giants. I mean, a lot of fans are saying, please take old Beckham off a punt return, because this secondary, they're physical. They get penalties. They're undisciplined. You look at Jim Schwartz, when he was in Detroit, that whole bullying kind of approach, that all came from Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams when they all were together at Tennessee. So you're going to see a type of – I mean, this game is going to be a dogfight. Offensively, they're light, undersized. They fly up and down the field. I mean, you're going to see a little bit of what you saw. They're going to watch that Eagles game on the road, that 27-0 loss to the Eagles. I mean, they will be coming after the Giants, and they better be ready up front. So look for a big physical game, but – I think defensively, you can get to Sean Hill, the quarterback. You can stop that approach. Larry Fitzgerald is really more of an inside receiver at this point. I mean, they find – I'm sorry, not Larry Fitzgerald. Kenny Britt.
Yeah, you lost me a second.
Yeah, Kenny Britt, another undisciplined guy. I think you can find ways to get to him, disrupt that timing.
Okay.
But, again, it's going to be – when you go on the road, you've got to silence the crowd in the first two series. You start off punting, it's going to be a long day.
I'll make it real simple. You got to win the battlefield position, and you better do it by creating some turnovers, because I don't see either one of these teams moving the ball up and down the field.
Right.
I really don't.
Exactly.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We are here every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag GiantsChat. He's Roman Oben. I'm Paul Dottino. Tomorrow, I think you guys have Schmelken Fiegels. And if you don't, you'll have somebody here. I promise you that. Have a good day, everybody.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
What a hit on punch.